I'm glad you're here today. Sincerely, I'm really glad you're here. It is so inspiring to me to see so many people that are as passionate about something like Grace Dover as I am. Just to be together in that and share in that excitement is just unbelievable. And a lot of y'all know me as Teresa's husband. That doesn't offend me at all. I'm very proud of that title. She is the women's director at Grace. Most of y'all know her. And I'm kind of attached to her, but yeah, I married out of my league. I'm not afraid to admit it. Make all the jokes, they're all true. I listen to them all. Something else you should know about me, Kyle said I'm going to be another grandfather very soon. Our daughter went into labor about an hour ago, so this might be a short sermon. We're going to get out of here, so be our third grandbaby. We're excited. I did used to be a preacher for many years. Now I work in hospice as a chaplain. End of life is fascinating to me. If you have any questions or ever want to talk about that or hospice or anything, I love it so much. Ask me anything. I always want to talk about that. And so we're ready to go on the Sermon on the Mount. Kyle, I guess, wanted me to put in my two cents on this sermon. And we're going to start. Let's just jump right into the text. We're in Matthew 5 this morning, verse 13, if you can see that. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. The theme, like Kyle said, there's a lot of themes in the Sermon on the Mount, but the one that we're trying to really focus on in this series is the difference. Is that the world is bad and evil, and we have to be different than that, don't we? I mean, we have to. A lot of y'all listen to Dave Ramsey, the financial peace guy, and he says in the context of finance and marriage, there's always a nerd and a free spirit. One that likes to spend money and one that likes to save it. And he said, it takes both of you. And I like what he says. He says, if both of you are the same, then one of you is unnecessary. If you don't hear anything else I say today, hear this. The church is necessary. If both of us are the same, one of us is unnecessary. The church is necessary, y'all. We've got to be different and we've got to be better. A lot of the sermons that you hear on the Sermon on the Mount, I notice, will tell you how to be the salt of the earth, how to be the light of the world. If you go and do these things, you'll be the salt of the earth. If you go and accomplish this, you'll be the light of the world. That's not what Jesus said, is it? There's a very important word I don't want you to miss. Jesus says, you what? You are. You can't go and become the salt of the earth. You already are. He says, church, you're the light of the world. You're the salt of the earth. And you may look at yourself and go, ugh. I'm not really living that way. I'm not a very good Christian. I commit a lot of sins. I'm not very salty. I'm not a very bright light. Let me put it to you this way. Some of my kids are here today, and I'm their father. And they'll tell you, some days I'll knock you out of the park. I'm the best dad on the planet, and I'm their dad. Some days I am a huge, embarrassing failure, and I'm their dad. I'm still their dad no matter what. Your light may be shining super bright. You may be the next best thing to an angel. And you're the salt of the earth and the light of the world. You may be living in an embarrassing, shameful way, full of sin, not even thinking about God, not even praying. But guess what? You are the salt of the earth and you are the light of the world. You may be doing a bad job of it, but you're still the salt and the light. Don't forget that. That's a small distinction, but it's important. You've got to remember what you are, not what you do. Kyle said this last week. He said, these aren't the do attitudes. These are the be attitudes. This isn't a list of things you try to attain and accomplish. It's who you are. And this is the same flow of thought through this. This is the next verses right after that. Jesus is saying, this is what I want you to be, not this list, this checklist of things I want you to do. You are the salt and you are the light. And we're the difference, and the devil doesn't want that. You know this. The devil's going to oppose us. He's going to try to knock us down and try to destroy us. And we got to fight him. And that's not easy. You know, sometimes I look at the immense task before me and all of the temptations that come and all of the feelings that I have, and it just looks like, man, the devil's so powerful, how can I ever beat him? And then I think back, you may not be able to tell it by looking at me today, but when I was younger, I was not a very good athlete. I know. When I graduated high school, I weighed 135 pounds. I was scrawny and uncoordinated. And, you know, I might have been small, but I was slow. And somehow, I still was able to make the basketball team. And I grew up in Burleson, if y'all know where Burleson is. And, you know, I cut my teeth beating up on the hated Cleburne Yellow Jackets and the Everman Bulldogs. Then one day, they decided we need to play Arlington Schools. Arlington Schools are twice our size in student body number and actual size. I don't know what they feed those kids over there, but we show up. I'm in eighth grade. How old are you in eighth grade? About 13, 14? So I'm 13 going on 8. You know, I'm probably playing with G.I. Joes on the bus on the way. We walk into this gym full of grown men that have beards and muscles and cigarettes hanging out their mouth. It seemed like they're just... It reminded me of that Bugs Bunny movie where he plays basketball with Michael Jordan against that team of giant... It was like that. Yes, yeah, Space Jam. The game went about like you would expect it to. And I was, you know, I was always just barely good enough to make the team. I get a lot of playing time. So I'm that kid that's always like, Coach, put me in. Coach, can I go in? Coach, can I? Not this game. And I don't remember what the score was when the coach asked me to go in. I just remember trying not to make eye contact. He's like, Ader. Yeah, Coach. Go in. I'm like, they look like they got it. I think we're doing pretty good. I did not rally a comeback. And I don't remember the score when he asked me to go in, but that game was almost 40 years ago, and I still remember the final score. You want me to tell you, don't you? It was 21 to 90. 90! Do you know how hard it is for an eighth grade basketball team to score 90 points in 32 minutes with nobody playing defense on them? We couldn't have done that. They put up 90 points on us. The only miracle of the story is that we got 21. I don't know how. But it's not like that with God, is it? Feels that way. Feels like I'm walking into those kind of odds. But there is no 90 to 21 with the Lord. He always steps in and protects and helps us overcome. We're not just left out there powerless to just get beat on. And he gives us a lot more inspiring halftime speech than our coach did, which the only thing I really remember from it was that him apologizing to us. He just said, there wasn't any like, stay in there, we got it. He just said, I'm sorry, guys. God is a little more inspiring than that. He says, yeah, there's big odds. Yeah, there's a big monster in front of you, but you're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. You've got this power that you can overcome, and I'm with you. The light is more powerful than the dark. It always is, always has been. And in Scripture, you'll see, Jesus is always kind of referred to symbolically with a lot of things like water and light. God's always referred to as light because it's more powerful than the darkness. Light has an unmistakable presence in darkness, unlike darkness has in the light. It's always more powerful. But that doesn't keep the devil from trying, does it? He's going to still try. He knows he's outmatched. He knows he's beaten, but he's still going to try his hardest to attack us, to defeat us, to overcome us. And why do they do that? Because they don't know. Look at John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made, and without him nothing was made that has been made. And in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. And some versions say has not understood it. The world hates things that it can't overcome. The world hates things that it doesn't understand. The world hates things that it can't make sense of. I grew up in the 80s. I saw E.T. I know that if something comes and it's strange, we try to kill it and destroy it. It's just weird to us. And so we don't understand, and we try to overcome and defeat these things. And God says, that's not going to work. Because you're better than that. And one of the most common tools that the devil uses is lies. The world will lie to you. The world will lie about you. Why do they do that? Well, because their leader is a liar. Look at John 8, 44. You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. That's an underrated verse right there. You should take that verse and study on your own because it has deep, deep implications in your life. We don't have time for it all today, but spend some time on that verse in your private study. They'll lie to you and about you because that's what they do. The devil is made of lies. Anything he says is automatically a lie. If he's trying to tell the truth, he doesn't understand it because it's not what he speaks. Satan's going to try to tell you, and the world will tell you. And I'm not just talking about the news, you know, and social media and Facebook and things you see on there. That stuff's been lies for years. You know that. I'm talking about your personal life, what people will say to you in conversation. They will lie. They'll lie to you and about you, and they'll lie about the church. Oh, the church is outdated. Church is dying. Church is shrinking. Church is racist. Church is greedy. Churches, abusers, the churches say, what do you believe about the church? I'll tell you what I believe about the church. I have a message of hope. I think the church is doing great. You know, and numbers, I don't know, man. I mean, we saw last week, every year, 4,000 churches open, 7,000 close. I didn't major in math, but I know that's not sustainable, except that I think those 7,000 churches that closed needed to close. Maybe it's a quality versus quantity thing. I think God is doing something in the church. He always does. I mean, this takes, if you look at the history of the church, it kind of goes in cycles, doesn't it? Sometimes we do better than others. Looks a lot like my personal life. You know, we do great, and then we kind of fall down. We do great and fall down. Y'all, we're doing fine. We might need a revival. We need a revival every once in a while, don't we? A few years ago, we had City Fest. How many of y'all were part of that or remember it, went to it? Yeah. If you walked away from that not thinking the church is in good shape, that was fantastic, wasn't it? We just need that sometimes. The church is alive and well, y'all. The church is doing great. Don't let the devil lie to you because you start. What he wants you to do is he wants you to feel like, I need to get up every week and go. And just people, they want me to pray for them and help them and be a part of their life. And I just, man, that's a big commitment. Okay, that's what he wants. You can't listen to the lies. He wants you to not be a part because he wants you alone. He wants you to be out by yourself, and he wants to know that nobody's coming to help you. And when you do things like City Fest, and we have things like revival, and we're successful, and we succeed, and we start to defeat the devil, then he quits lying, and he starts going in on insults. And he'll start saying things like, oh, they're crazy. Them Christians are just weird. You know, and to be fair, if a friend of mine invited me to their church and said, here, eat this. Well, what is it? It's flesh. Wash it down with this blood. All right, that's weird, right? If you don't know the symbolism. So the world will take that and they'll go, man, they drink blood over there. It's weird. Christians are weird. And they'll try to make it seem marginalized. They try to make the church seem like you're a dork if you go here, like you're a bizarre cult member, right? I mean, that's what the world does because they want you to be away. They want you to be alone and isolated. The devil is trying to get you alone. And if you let him, he will use shame and isolation and embarrassment as powerful, powerful tools. And they can be like chains and keep you from doing what you need to do. You've felt this in your life, haven't you? Where you want to say something. You feel like you should tell someone about Jesus, but I don't want to be a nerd. I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to offend them. How many times have you felt that? I have a lot. It's just one of the tools that he used. If you look at Acts chapter 26, Paul kind of felt this. He was trying to defend himself. And this is what he says. At this point, Festus, not that one, Gunsmoke people. At this point, Festus interrupted Paul's defense. You're out of your mind, Paul, he shouted. Your great learning is driving you insane. All this Jesus talk's crazy. Paul says, I'm not insane, most excellent Festus. What I'm saying is true and reasonable. The king is familiar with these things, and I can speak freely to him. I am convinced that none of this has escaped his notice because it was not done in a corner. King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? I know you do. Then Agrippa said to Paul, do you think that in such a short time you can persuade me to be a Christian? And here's what Paul said. Short time or long, I pray to God that not only you, but all who are listening to me today may become what I am. Well, except for these chains, of course. You'd leave that part out, God. That'd be wonderful. But he says, you're crazy. Paul says, yeah, I am crazy. I want you all to be crazy with me. Crazy for Jesus. David embraced it. Celebrating God, dancing naked in the street. His wife said, you have lost your mind. And he said, oh, honey, I'm just getting started. I was in a internet discussion with somebody last week, and the guy is about religion, and the guy said, I can't take anyone seriously who believes in a magic sky wizard. Magic sky wizard. So I said, well, I think you meant that as an insult, but that's a pretty cool name. I might start using it. To which he replied, LOL. You know, it kind of matters how we respond sometimes. I've been listening to KVNE doing their 30-day challenge where they start in January. It's made a difference in my life, where they just challenge you to listen to nothing but KVNE Christian music for 30 days. And it was really a pretty cool deal. And in one of the things, which, by the way, I don't think she's here today. We have one of the KVNE DJs goes to church here, Lacey Cavanis. Y'all probably know her. She's not here, so I can embarrass her. But I think we should be proud of that. It's pretty cool, isn't it? Yeah. Come on. And so one of the DJs, might have been her, was sharing a story about one of the old British theologians. And he was talking to a guy that was an atheist. And the guy said, well, Christianity is just a crutch. You know how British people are. He said, well, then I hope you break both of your legs. It's one way of doing it, I guess. But the goal is isolation. I mean, you get that, right? You understand what the devil's trying to do. Like when you sin and you feel bad and you have shame or you're embarrassed or just tired, you get burned out or someone at church hurt your feelings or Kyle says something that you didn't think was right. And, you know, he wants you to be alone. He wants you to be alone. And that's the lie, is that he will say, you are alone. Sometimes he yells in your face, you're alone. Sometimes he whispers in your ear, you're alone, over and over, and you start feeling it, and then you feel like you're alone. And here's what you say, I'm not alone. I am the light of the world, and I am the salt of the earth. Because you are not alone. There's something you need to know about the church you go to. And I expect you already know it, and that's probably part of the reason why you're here. But in case you don't, you need to know this. I'm not a pastor of this church, and I'm not an elder of this church. But I know the men that are. And I know their heart. And I know that if you let them know you're in trouble, that they will grab their sword and come running. And they will kick in the door and they will grab you out of the mouth of the lion. I've seen them do it many times for many people. They've done it for me. They've done it for my wife. They've done it for my children. And they will do it for you. Believe that. Do you understand how valuable that is? And for every one of them, there's dozens of church members behind them, sword in hand, coming for you. And soon, very soon, in fact, we already are doing that for this community. And Grace Dover will be known as a church that sees people. And people in this community will say, I'm hurt, I'm broken, I'm sad, I'm alone. And people will say, then go to that church. Because they will help you. And they will love you. And they will see you. That's the salt of the earth. That's the light of the world. You're not alone. You hear the phrase, God won't call you to do anything he won't equip you to do. Well, he's certainly not going to call you to be something that he won't equip you to be. He's given us everything we need. He will supply, and he will rescue, and he will save. He always sends a blessing, even when you don't expect it. For Christmas, my daughter and her fiancé gave us a gift, a weekend trip to Broken Bow, Oklahoma. And we scheduled this trip for a couple weeks ago when the bad winter storm came, and it didn't do much here, but up there, man, it came. And my wife and I got there just in time, snowed, 2 foot of snow on the ground. And we were trapped in this cabin, had a hot tub out on the deck. We had our snacks and our jammies and just, you know, we were cuddled up in there for 3 days. And at one point I was like, we are living in a Hallmark movie. This is just like a Hallmark movie. And then we had to leave. And then it had melted for a couple days, but not quite enough. And I thought it had. And we kind of leaving, and we're down in this kind of valley, and we're getting up. Man, we almost made it to the top of the hill. Then we got stuck. And I'm trying to get us unstuck. Of course, I make it worse. And I'm thinking, we call a tow truck. It's going to be over an hour. And I'm like, I don't want to be out here in the dark. I don't know what we're going to do. And then, out of the woods, emerges what could only be described as a male model. Perfect hair. Perfect teeth, impeccable clothes. I'm Nick. Do you need some help? Going, yeah, Nick, we need some help. Thank you. Come on. So he comes out, and I'm like, man, the Lord provide. This is great. We're getting out there, and we're pushing. I'm like, man, you know, we spent this great weekend, and now we're trying to get out. We had a little trouble, but we're not in big danger. Like, this is just like a Hallmark movie. Oh, no. This is just like a Hallmark movie. And I'm the quirky yet flawed love interest, and he is the handsome stranger. I know exactly what's about to happen. No, thank you, Nick. We don't need your help. You can I didn't say that. He helped us, and we got out, and the Lord provided. So thank you, stranger Nick, for getting us unstuck and not stealing my wife. It was great. You never know what God's going to do. He always shows up and always provides, doesn't he? People say, you know, I see what you're saying about being the salt and the light, but man, you don't know what I've done. You don't know how bad I am. You don't know where I've been. You don't know the things I've said. You don't know terrible sins I've committed. Well, first of all, it ain't a contest. Lucky for you, because I'd mop the floor with you. I'm a professional sinner. I've got lots of experience. Second of all, Jesus' blood washed away all your sins. All your sins. If you don't believe that, well, that's another sermon entirely, isn't it? I think we all believe that, and we have to be reminded of that, because that's what makes us the salt and the light. Y'all, we're together on this thing. We're unified. This is just such a fun and sacred time in the history of this church body. But we're young, and we're new, and y'all, let's be honest, we have not faced a lot of challenges yet, but sharpen your swords, because we got a fight coming. It's going to happen, isn't it? We're ready, aren't we? Let's be together on this. And I say that if we're to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world in this community, then I think we should make it the brightest lighthouse, the deepest salt mine East Texas has ever seen. In order for that to happen, we need you. We need you. We all kind of dragged in here in a different state. Some of us are, you know, next best thing to an angel. Some of us are living in the pit. We're all in different areas, but we got to get it figured out. Call on us to help you, because we're going to be calling on you. You know, I work in hospice, and what they say is true. At the end of life, nobody says, I wish I'd worked more. I wish I'd spent more time staring at my phone and ignoring my kids. I wish I would have been even more emotionally distant from my wife so she never really knew me. I wish I would have drank more. I wish I would have done more. Nobody says that. Everybody has regrets on those things. Let's live our life with no regrets and just get our stuff turned around. How do we do that? Well, back it up 12 verses. We talked about that last week. In the Beatitudes, he shows us what this is supposed to look like. He says, you are the salt of the earth and the light of the world, and so your obligation is to live in this way, and I can help you. Kyle says every week, I want to give you a pebble in your shoe, something that kind of bother you, something to think about, some question to ask yourself, and so this is it for this week. You are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world, and the question is, does everyone in your life outside of this building know it? Does anyone in your life outside of this building know it? And if not, what's the next step? Ask yourself that. What's my next step? Am I going to stop? Am I going to turn it around? Am I going to fix this? Or am I going to carry on? Am I going to keep lying? Am I going to keep pretending? Am I going to keep staying arm's length from the church body just show up on Sunday and the other 167 hours of the week, I'm going to live like the world does and be just like them. Doesn't work, y'all. You're here because you're called to be bright. You're called to be the salt of the earth. And I'm excited about that. And I believe in that. If our worship team will come up and get ready, we're about to have communion together. But I want to close with a passage out of Mark chapter 9. Just because I like Jesus' words better than mine. So we'll close with this. Everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can you make it salty again? Have salt among yourselves and be at peace with each other. Amen.